Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black radio networks that explores solutions to issues concerning the black community, presents Black Urban America. All you guys that are listening by laptop, you can phone in at 516-531-9540. That's 516-531-9540. If you have any comments or questions, please press 1. The lineup, the weekly lineup is on Tuesday evenings. We have Black Urban America. I'm your host, Kenny Jones, and the return to the program, my co-host, Michonne Williams. Also, on Wednesday, we had The Cutting Edge with Michonne. On Thursday, we have Port of Harlem with Mr. Wayne A. Young. And on Saturdays, that finish up with Provocative Thought with Mr. Carlton Steed. All shows begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Tonight, we're going to discuss, what is the humanity of the black woman? How do society feels about the black woman? What are some of the issues concerning the black woman? Tonight we have screenwriting and recorded artist, co-owner, creator at Beaver Wilson Girls and Son Media, and her recent production is The Heart. Black Heart on the Table. Her name is Ms. Chanel Wilson. How are you, Ms. Wilson?
I'm good.
I'd like to introduce you to Michonne. Michonne, that's Ms. Wilson.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really good.
I'd like to thank you for coming on the show tonight. I know where you are is still bright and daytime.
Yes.
What is Black Heart on the Table? I listened to introduction piece and it sounded interesting.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Black Heart on the Table is an EP project in 3 parts, and it's a collection of songs from my catalog that explores both the theme of American conditioning, oppression, and conditional love towards and within the black community. And so the first project that's out now is Volume 1, A Warrior's Lament.
Okay. Let me ask you some questions. How do you think society views the black woman?
I feel society meals the black woman always. in any setting, be it corporate, be it in media, social media, we are always the mule, the ones everyone will look to us for the advisement or for the social currency or what's setting the new trend, and then they'll be ready to either take it or use what we already have through our quote-unquote black girl magic to streamline whatever it is that they are doing. So we'll experience a lot of co-opting. So I just feel like we're mulled a lot.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, a lot of people look at the black woman. And speaking about looking at the black woman, do you think the black woman have provided service to her people and sacrificed for her people?
Yes, I do. I do. What I enjoy about the term black girl magic is that we use that magic, so to speak, to shore up the things that our community needs in the midst of our oppression. I always think of the phrase making a dollar out of 15 cents. We've always had that big mama or that auntie down the street or someone that we could rely on if we were in the middle of something, that village. And so I do feel that we will use our magic at times, even at times to our own detriment, to help others, to help our people, because we're givers, we're nurturers. And unfortunately, society has trained us to be that way in some aspects as well. So,
speak of magic, do you think our race considered the black woman superheroes? Talk about stretching a dollar out of 15 cents and Big Mama, mm-hmm. even though there's no more Big Mamas, the Big Mama yeah. down the street. Do you think our race considered the black woman superhero syndrome?
I do. I think we have all adapted to certain behaviors throughout the years of our experience here in America. And just as a result of the various things that happened through each generation leading up and even till now, I noticed some people are waking up to it, and we're getting to a place where we're trying to right wrongs. There's a lot of different movements like Protect Black Women, and our community is starting to realize, you know, we all, and I see our men also fighting as well, so I definitely don't want people to take what I'm saying that is against our men at all. But I do notice that we have all adapted to holding on to what our big mamas have done for us in some settings. Not all, of course, but some, and how it is definitely hindering us, and in some cases, like I said, sending us to an early grave. So, yes, I did.
What happened to Big Mama? Like I said, I don't think there's no more Big Mamas left. What happened to Big Mama?
Ooh, goodness. Oh, life. That's the short answer, life. In my project, the Deepa song I open up with, "This is my life." And that phrase, especially this year alone, has meant so many different things to me. Both saying this is my life, like I want to show you a presentation of what it looks like, but then also it's a declaration saying, wait a minute, I can't be a superhero anymore. This is my life, my human life, so to speak. So when it comes to Big Mama and also just with black women in general, like when I know with the generations, age and various things change as our generations continue to grow and continue to move forward. But what ends up happening is some of those behaviors keep getting passed down. One of the quotes I say in my project is, I know I'm magical, but I'm also human. So it's definitely a time right now just declaring that humanness, recognizing that we can't take on everything, and accepting that first.
Which I do try,
making
though.
That first statement of healing. We do. I could put my hand, both hands up actually and say, I know I tried to be everything.
Yeah. So with that said, do our race really value the black woman today?
In some aspects, I do think that our race does value who we are, what we are, and what we have been. Unfortunately, in the action of the value, because there's so much going on, I try not to judge people's actions too much because there's so many reasons why we make the decisions we make. Sometimes it feels like sometimes we're not valued. There are some settings, there are certain gender wars you'll see online and certain settings that you'll see certain groups trying to create. And so you'll see people minimize what and who the black woman is. You'll see them minimize the beauty because they're dealing with certain Eurocentric standards and certain ideals. So they don't see the beauty within. And then as a result, certain situations will occur.
Why do you think some folks devalue, well, all the sacrifices and services you have provided for our families and communities, why do you think that there are a segment of our population, and I talk about black folks, that tries to devalue the black woman?
Some of it comes from that person's own insecurity within that community, specifically to our race. It could come from their own insecurity. Maybe they want to take the spotlight off of, I trying very carefully not to pit a war because I know there's so many different situations, but maybe they want to take the spotlight of what they are doing or aren't doing, because it's all about family. Overall, the community is about, it's common unity. It's about the family and having that family support. And so if Big Mama is in a situation where she's doing the work because there's an absence, for whatever reason, there could be various reasons why there's an absence. But sometimes I've noticed in some cases, some people will place some devalue to take that spotlight off. In other cases, there are situations where people have either come from something broken and they've adapted to certain ideals. And so because they don't value their own self and see the beauty within their self, and value can deal with so much. When we value our own self, we will appreciate ourselves, we'll treat ourselves a particular way, we'll protect ourselves. So when it comes to our parent or our mother or our significant other, if we don't value ourselves first, we're definitely not going to place any value on the other person. And that comes from just that place of not being able to protect, not being able to serve, because, you know, there's no value there. So that's where it comes from. And I always say I try not to judge the behaviors, because so many things, it's come out of various situations. You know, I think about where our millennials are. I'm a Gen X millennial. And I remember when I was coming up between 1987, I'll even take it to 1993, we saw a very big transition with our family home life because of what happened with the drug epidemic. We know how it got here, but there was still an aftermath as a result, and a lot of our kids were either in foster care or were being raised by grandma. Both parents were gone. And as a result, because of how that child was raised, because they didn't have mommy or daddy to rely on, they may view something a little bit differently. They may
view
their mama
differently. And you know what? I had a show a couple of weeks ago where Sister Dell, she was talking about multi-generational drama.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in the 80s with the crack epidemic.
Yeah.
But there are families that are still suffering from that epidemic. You know, talk about an epidemic. That was, as a matter of fact, there are communities and black cities that have not make a comeback, like Baltimore, for example.
No, exactly. Exactly.
I know my sister works in Baltimore and everything, and she said it's still a devastation there in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Michonne. I know you have some questions.
Right, I do. What are some of the mental side effects of dedicating your life to fighting social injustice?
I know for me, just with the various aspects, I'm always tired. So you will find yourself always tired and not always protecting your time. This year I recently had a health scare, and as a result, I broke Black Heart on the table, but actually found a block in my heart. And it was because I will go so hard to provide, you know, for my family, my child. I have a multi-generational household, so I do have a parent who's a little, she's sickly, so I help out with that. And then even as a younger child, I helped out with my grandmother. So I've always been in a place of servitude. And then I used to serve in my church community as a clergy minister, and, you know, we'd be out there either serving the people, going on the streets, working with all types of demographics. And just various situations of congregational care. The weight and the burden of all of those things, because you're providing a service, you also have to have that outlet. And so because I would find myself either not having the proper outlet, the proper decompression time, maybe a proper time to just go exercise and take a walk and breathe and decompress all of that, it builds up. And so you'll find yourself either just burnt out, not able to give enough to your family. And in my case, it showed up in my health. I had a small block. So it's really important that when you are an activist and when you, I always say the phrase, go hard in the paint or go hard to serve, that you give yourself some type of Sabbath. One of the churches I used to belong to almost two decades ago, he said, I said, give yourself some type of Sabbath rest, where you have a day where you shut everything off, you shut off the phone, your television, your internet, so that you can just journal and reflect and maybe go take that walk or say, hey, maybe I need to redo some things within my own life to make sure that I don't let this spill over to where I have a big issue or a big problem or a big blow up of burnout.
Okay, I have another question.
Yeah.
Why do so many black women try to live up to the European beauty standards?
When it comes to our European beauty standards, a lot of it has to do with assimilation. Most of the time, we wanna just wear our natural hair or deal with the various colors within our complexion because we both have undertones and then we have our main color. But unfortunately, we are American. And when I say it unfortunately, I don't want people to take that the wrong way, but we are American and we know what comes with that when we're African American. There's two different things happening there that are diametrically opposed to each other in most aspects, especially when it comes to oppression. And so we know our Eurocentric experience continues to oppress us to assimilate to what's going on. So when it comes to our appearance, our hair, be it weaves, a protective style, locks, we're always under someone's scrutiny on how to wear that look or wear that style. The year before with the pandemic, it throws everybody off with what was last year. But just, you know, passed that law where African-American women could wear natural hairstyles in the corporate community. I've been corporate for over 20 years, and there were some settings where I knew don't wear braids, just put on a wig, so that you could fit a certain standard. So I believe most of the time it is a form of assimilation. I did a small little documentary on this for school back in 2010. You know, unfortunately there are some people and some women who feel that they are not beautiful on the inside. But a lot of it has to do with the conditioning, not because they hate themselves, but because they were conditioned. We all had a press and comb experience. We've all had that. I took my braids down, and I got a small window so that I get to the hair salon moment. All that comes from our experience here in this country and the shame that is put on us. I've heard one activist say we deal with psychological warfare when we look at billboards. Nothing. When we walk from a little girl all the way until now, we go out and we look on the billboards, we're always going to see images of things that are opposite of what we see when we look in the mirror and that wig is off. So,
and also, the media plays a thing. You talk about the billboard.
Yeah.
The media. The media always have these images, you know, your body type, hair type, styles, and what have you. Yeah. So, going back to your service, and you speak of your centric thought. Who do other cultures rather to deal with, the black woman or the man? What culture, you know, other cultures, who they rather interact with? You speak of the corporate world, the political world, the corporate world, social service world, all these industries, who they rather deal with, interact with, the black woman or the black man?
The black woman. Unfortunately, our black men are disenfranchised by our society, and they have no privilege whatsoever in this society. So that's why you will see, in most cases, and it's not, and I'm not taking away from the women who have gone to school or have achieved degrees, but that's why you will see a bigger push to push the woman ahead of the black man for various reasons. But our
what
society
some of these reasons?
Definitely has shown
what,
that.
What are some of these reasons they rather see us on the streets hustling, going to the prison industry, you know, and have our women be successful more so than the brothers?
It all goes back to slavery. when the complete family is broken, it all goes back to community and common unity. So if our man is disenfranchised and the woman is now put in this mammy role, that's why I say in my opening poem, you've mammied me and I allowed it. And I pulled that right out of both my experience in the work for corporate world and in the church world, because what I noticed is if I was in a corporate environment, I was definitely pushed on the forefront to get the bulk of the work, and other people were definitely pushed off to the side. And even in the church world, I was always volunteered for some form of service and multiple services, even to the point of my own detriment. And that's what happens to a lot of us Black women in this society. We will get pushed into that mammy role and just forced. You're going to be that ox. You're going to be our workforce. This is what, you know, quote-unquote, massa wants. And our men will just get pushed off to the side. They'll be disenfranchised. It'll start with school, with the school to prison, pipeline. It'll start in the education where our young boys, you know, I have a son, he's 7, and my child's father and I have decided to do a charter homeschool, Montessori style school, instead of him going into a traditional school. And he has had greater results in his education because within the Montessori style with his teachers, he learns through games. He learns through activities instead of having to be forced to sit. And what we learn when we go and study psychology and when we study the way young boys are and young girls are, young boys learn better through activity and learning because there's so much testosterone and energy. You can't just sit them down. So our men begin to get very disenfranchised just right there in that first, you know, infancy to elementary. And then once it's time to get to, you know, the high school level and college, the ones who did persevere and maybe go to tutoring or the various things they needed to gain the education to move forward, you know, they try to make some type of success within this disenfranchisement with work. But then the others, they're left with, okay, now I'm a man. I need to go make some money. I can't spend any more time trying to go back and relearn the things I didn't. So our society does that to keep us in a state of brokenness, because then when you start looking at other cultures, other groups, other school systems and different zip codes, there are different situations. There are different curriculums. There are different practices that don't happen in our communities.
That's why I keep on saying, and I sound like a broken record, we need to have our own schools. But however, when we have our own schools, we got to make sure it's African-centered with STEM curriculum.
Yes.
Do you feel appreciated? Black women feel appreciated?
Most of the time, no. It's like that passing by kind of, thank you.
That you're doing, we should be appreciative of the sisters that are out there busting their chops.
Yeah, most of the time, you know, I do see some that are definitely giving us the flowers before we're gone, and I appreciate it. I really do. But I have noticed, especially like I said, with the healthcare I had this year, it's made me reevaluate. And goes back to that word value again, that root word. But it's reevaluate my value, reevaluate all the things I was taking for granted for myself. And then that's when I realized, you know what, because I'm taking it for granted and not putting that value and appreciation, like, girl, you got this. You are talented. You know, you did do a good job. I'm allowing others to do the same. And I realized, no, there isn't any appreciation. So yeah. that is my honest answer with that. Yeah.
Go ahead, Michonne.
Why do professional Black women suffer from imposter syndrome when they step into spaces traditionally held by white men?
Unfortunately, and it's the phrase of drinking that Kool-Aid, I understand in the corporate world, you do have to wear certain hats. Who I am in the corporate environment, I am still myself, I still have my integrity, but there are certain ways you have to operate in those spaces. You know the phrase, when in Rome, you know, act as everyone else is acting, you know, go that direction. Unfortunately, some people do drink the Kool-Aid of it. They don't turn it off when they get into the car to go home. They take it into our communities, and that we don't need that in our communities at all. Yes, when you are in certain – my mom always told me, especially when I would have to do different things in certain corporate environments, play the game, play to win. But remember, come home to your family and turn off whatever has to be turned off. And sometimes you do have to play to win and play that game in that society for your economics, because you got to bring home your paycheck, so to speak. But then when you take that same mentality into your community, so to speak, your cultural community, it can do various things, actually. It can break the trust, arrogance. There's certain phrases like I think of just high on a horse, so to speak. When you're mm-hmm. trying to build a community, that is a space of support. That is a space of nurturing, of culture, of cultivating, especially the young minds. And even when there's that ebb and flow between, you know, husband and wife, brother, sister, father, mother, there are certain things that just cannot sustain the culture, so to speak, or sustain the community. And unfortunately, some people don't see the whole picture. They're only stuck on the small portion of the whole picture. And so they'll bring that into the community, and it does rob relationships. That's what it's really all about, having functional relationships. And when we bring that in, it creates dysfunction, a lot of dysfunction, unfortunately. And that's where rehabilitation and recovery should come in.
Why are black women ignored in the social justice movement?
It goes back to us just being mules, being an ox. I've used that phrase a couple of times, find a woman, not an ox. So when it comes into those spaces, people will take every talking point. I found myself even saying, I'll hear a lot of people using my grandmother's, you know, backyard antics or colloquial euphemisms, and it's right there in someone else's social justice movement, even though I know why my grandmother and her sisters used it, because they needed it for what they needed, both for their time frame and even for now. But people will ox us, they'll mule us, so they'll use that for their platform to push it. So that's why we're kind of shut out of those spaces.
But you know, a lot of these movements, the sisters are in the forefront. They're on the planning boards.
Mm-hmm.
They are ahead, you know. So
yeah.
And again, go back what we were discussing a few minutes ago. I think most of society rather deal with y'all than to deal with us.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like you'll make a point of contact. And unfortunately, it goes back to that phrase I use, you've mannied me and I allowed it. We have to understand the situation that we're in. We've been oppressed for a very long time, for over 400 years. And these practices, these behaviors have been passed down to us. So in some cases, people see mammy as survival. It's like, okay, well, we don't have a plan. We don't have, like, this black agenda yet, as far as how we're going to get ourselves out of this oppression. So I got to survive. I got to make sure the babies eat. So I'll keep playing the liaison role, but it takes that wake-up call, so to speak. You know, everyone likes to joke about being quote-unquote woke. It does take an awakening, and unfortunately, a lot of us choose sleep. And like I said, I try not to judge people when they are asleep. It's painful because it does derail the cause. It does derail all of us to move forward. I always believe that reparations should be both a check, it should be a form of rehabilitation, and it should be some type of retribution as well. And I say basically reparations for the actual act of slavery, the theft we had, and Jim Crow redlining, then rehabilitation for all the post-traumatic slave syndrome we've had and all the various things we've endured. We do need some kind of rehabilitation, some type of therapy, free therapy for all of us so we can interact with each other. And then I say retribution for all the crimes that were committed, because various crimes were committed and no justice was served. So there needs to be something handled on the law side. And the reason I bring that up is because in our rehabilitation, when we learn how to really build our community and see it as common unity, I break that word up, community, and then break it up to common unity. What is our common, our basic agenda? What is it that we're trying to fight for, thrive for, live for? Because this is our support system. And if it's not shored up properly, we're not going to know how to operate when we step out of it. So
right.
That's my answer to that.
Also, you talk about rehabilitation. We need to rehabilitate and reshape our thinking process. And for so long, and part of oppression is being dependent on the people that don't like you.
Right. That is so true. That is exactly true. The rehabilitation is a form. It's basically when you're in the healing process, and I've heard someone say that the healing process could be an act of war on another side. So basically with Black people healing, it's going to be seen as an act of war from any other group who is basically able to thrive on our oppression. So for us, it's like a three-step, four-step process. It starts in that mind. It starts with accepting, wait a minute, I've got something that I need to heal from. And then it's so many different causes of unlearning those learned behaviors, dealing with the root of where it comes from, seeing is this a trigger or a pain body, or, you know, is this my personality, and do I need to change a little bit? Do I need to grow up? Do I need to mature? And then just learning, okay, what does functionality look like? What does it look like for me to interact with the whole man here, a whole healed man, not somebody that's broken? What does it look like if I know someone is broken? How do I care? How do I interact with that person with care? I used to work in the mental health field, and we had to always take into just triggers, pain bodies, and then also how to interact with someone who may be in the process of recovery, or if we know they're in the process and they haven't fully healed, how not to continue to re-injure that person. So we have to handle with care. It's like, it goes back to congregational care as well.
And a lot of these behaviors that we have also have to be unlearned.
Yes.
A lot of these behaviors have been passed down generational. The way we view women, the way women view us, the way we view the community, the way we view somebody that's making progress. You know, so, yes, a lot of our behaviors has to be unlearned. And the way we think about ourselves when we look in the mirror.
Yes.
And that's why you talk about in the beginning of the discussion of the conversation, you know, when Michelle asked about the beauty and what have you, you know, trying to continue to look like somebody else, accepting our own natural selves.
Yes. And that's a big one.
The mental status of the individual.
Yeah.
It's a very long process.
Yes, it is. It's a rebuilding also. You know, our confidence has been stripped from us. And unfortunately, because of that, we will hold our pride in various things. When I first had my big chop when I was 18 years old, a billion years ago, and I remember the first time I looked in the mirror, I said, oh, my God, I look like Mammy. Oh, my God, I look like a slave. What is wrong with me? So I went and braided my hair up really quickly. I used to braid hair when I was in college and then even a little bit into my 30s. And I braid for other people as well. And I was like, oh, my God, I wanted to do the chop, but I wasn't ready to see my face. I wasn't ready to see the totality of what that looked like. I wrote about it in my book, Identity, a Black Girl's Hair Memoir. And what I say is that I was so used to always having my hair straight. I've always had shoulder-length hair. So that hides my features in a lot of ways. But when I cut it, my features became very pronounced. I began to see all of it. And I wasn't ready. And so I had to go through a slow journey of just first wearing texturizers and different length looks. And then finally at 21, I said, I'm going to do it again. And when I did it again, that time I was able to see and honor my beauty. That's a process right there, especially if you've never done it. I always say every woman should shave their head at least one time in their life, just so they can embrace that, embrace the fullness of their face, embrace the structure, because when we have the lens, it definitely changes our whole face. And, you know, I get it. Some people everyone has the right to wear whatever look you have. I always believe that your hair is happiest when it's natural, but you're happiest when you're stylistically free. But in the midst of that, my cousin, Dr. Kendra Carr, always says, in the midst of that, you know, as black women, we can wear hair anywhere we want, but we always should always know that we don't have to, that we should always know we're beautiful without it. But if we want, it's a choice. But we should always know, even in the midst of that choice, we're still beautiful without it. So
right.
I hope that part makes sense. Yeah.
Do you think, we were speaking earlier about drama, do you think that black men care about what the black woman have to face on a daily basis and generational too? Do you think black men care of what the black woman has to face?
Yes. Yes, I do. I do. Any man, especially when you think of, you know, what a man is, they're a protector, they're a beautiful, beautiful, handsome human. I have spoken to so many different men about this subject when it comes to the plight, you know, what black women go through. And I know for a fact that on their end, they're like, I want to be able to always protect you. And it's not that they don't want to protect us or can't. There's some situations they also could get killed. And some men will actually go out and still, I'm protecting you even if to my, you know, to my death. But I do believe, yes, that black men do care about what we're going through. Now, yes, we should never confuse the small amount who's drinking the Kool-Aid and are holding on to certain elements of assimilation or certain elements of, you know, I know we have oppression, but there's nothing we can do about it, so I'm going to go back to sleep and I'm just going to pretend I don't care and go the other way. But
mm-hmm.
even in that, we should always recognize the true heart and soul of our black man. It's when our men are broken down and disenfranchised, yes, they're fighting for that first basic need. You know, I got to be able to provide. I got to be able to do this. But they do, and I could never wholeheartedly say that they don't. Now, yes, there are situations where things happen. People may be dealing with what they're dealing with and can't focus on it, and in some cases it can feel that way. Now, yes, there are dysfunctional situations out there as well, and you have to be able to discern what those things are. Like when I think about people who are maybe in an abusive relationship or someone who's dealing with someone who may be a narcissist, those are completely different, completely isolated and different from what I'm speaking of. But when I think of the overall, especially the men that I've encountered throughout the years and I just listen to them share their experience both with black women, their sisters, their mothers, their friends, there's a deep heart, a deep unctioning, a deep flow that comes out of most of the men that I've spoken with. And they do care about our plight. They do care about what we go through. And they do want to see a change. So
why aren't we more protected then?
It has to do with our society in a lot of cases. Unfortunately, we all have been trained to be a little docile. Yes, we have a heart, but I see it in memes all the time, and you see it in life too. There'll be a meme world and say, how come you can, you know, get really, you know, you can go hard in the paint on someone who, you know, may look like you, but when it comes to another situation where you see, you know, an authority figure, you know, who's not black, or something happening in society that's not right, and you don't do anything. And a lot of that comes with our fear. We are really dealing with oppression. We're dealing with our assimilation. We're dealing with the effects of what's been passed down.
I think that's the biggest problem, assimilation. If we stop trying to be like people of other cultures that don't like us, and again, like I said before, accept what we are and who we think we are, you know, maybe there'll be more progress in the future.
I agree.
Right now, we're trying to be like others. I think.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay. You all mentioned the strong black woman. So how does the expectation of strength harm women and black girls?
It continues the cycle of doing too much, doing a lot. And I know we do it because if we don't do it, it's not going to get done. But it does continue the cycle. This this year, last year, and the year before, so starting in 2019, I put myself, I was 38, so I was putting myself on this black femininity diet where I was telling myself, you got to deal with every element of your black femininity. And you got to deal with this because, you know, you're a parent, your child sees you. A lot of it spawned from me becoming a parent, too. I got to add that. And I noticed the first thing I said, I'm always going hard in the paint for everything. And I said, where's my weakness? Where's my moment of, let me just breathe for a second. And I started reading different books. There's someone I found online, April Mason. I appreciate what she talks about. And there are other people like Miss Chrissy on YouTube. There's different, just different topics on black femininity and dealing with that. Because once again, when we watch Big Mama, you know, I have a Big Mama. I have about three Big Mamas. And I've watched all of them. Strength, strength, strength. Okay, we got to get this done. We got to do this. You just get it done. Okay, don't complain about it. Just get it done. And, you know, and I've seen, you know, what that kind of plays out. And even in my own life, I had to say, okay, do we want to still be here, you know, 50 years from now, 40 years from now? Do you want to become a grandmother? Or do you want to succumb to always operating out of this superhuman strength? It's time to, you know, relax. So for us as black women, we definitely should put ourselves on some type of diet. Let me just study the elements of my femininity and the beauty of the elements of my weakness. Weakness is not a dirty word. It's actually, some people say meekness. I think that is also our strength. Even recently, I've noticed as I begin to delegate certain tasks and as I begin to rely on my village more, in those resting moments, that's when I recover better. That's when I heal better, and that's when I'm able to see the bigger picture. So I think all of us should definitely take that time, either go on a retreat, get in a healing circle, prayer, whatever works for you, take that time because we need that time to blossom. It's like you equate it to a flower. A flower has to be watered.
Do you have that time, ladies? I'm asking both of y'all are professional women. You know, hold up. You name a whole list of things. You got to take care of this. The kids.
Yeah.
You got the bills.
Yeah.
And this and that and thus. I mean,
yeah.
Do you have the time? Both of y'all can answer. I'm not a woman. You know, I won't pretend to be one. I'm a guy, 100% man. You know, do y'all have the time?
The reality.
Well, like when I speak to Michelle sometimes, she's talking to me in the car all the time, taking I got a Zoom at such and such a time. Oh, I got to take. I'm going on my grandchildren here. Do y'all have the time?
Realistically, some would say no. I know if you asked me before March when I had my heart incident, I would say no, I don't have the time. Now, after the heart incident, when I almost saw my time stop, I find the time. Even if it's 9 minutes in the day and I'm saying for 9 minutes I'm closing my door and I'm just going to take focused breaths. Those focused breaths in that 9 minutes gets me back together, and it also just restores me. So I'm going to be honest. There's a lot of things that have to be done in the day. So we have to take our time back. We have to live it as if to steal it, as if to say, you know what, I'm going to become more protective of it. If I got 10 minutes here, if I got 30 minutes there, I'm going to sit down and take a power nap. I'm going to sit down and turn on my favorite song to get me to relax for a second, just to get my blood pressure to come down. So that's
how about
my
you,
answer.
Do you have the time for yourself?
Oh, yes. I take time for myself every day, even if it's 30 minutes, 15 minutes. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I do. I manifest. I visualize.
I don't see how. Now, be sure you know you don't take 30 minutes a day for yourself. Why you gonna tell the world that?
Okay,
that's it?
I'm gonna tell you when I do it. I do mine mostly at night, right before I go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I shut my bedroom door. Once I shut that door, I'm like, okay, you can't disturb me.
Mm-hmm.
And I make the time because I had to. I need it.
Well, ladies, so
I knew I needed
the same thing. Both y'all said the same thing. You with the heart attack, Ms. Wilson. Me, Sean, mm-hmm. you're forced to. Why get to that place? That question's for mm-hmm. both of you. Why get to that
place? I was stressed.
Mm-hmm.
I have too many hats to juggle. I wear too many.
Mm-hmm.
I had to change my life and lifestyle mm-hmm. when I had to take 2 grandkids and raise them, mm-hmm. which was not in my plans, but I had to do what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to rearrange a lot of things in my life, and it was kind of traumatic for me because that wasn't in my plans. I didn't see it coming. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes you just, as Black women, you just got to pick up the pieces and go with it.
You brought something.
Whatever life throws at you.
I got a question for both of you. And Ms. Wilson, you go first, and Ms. Sean, you tackle it. Do we, as a culture, place too much responsibilities and too much, we really looking for you to carry the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that is real in our culture?
Yes, it is. It is. It takes you know, away from the other.
Heavily on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's true. It takes an awareness of the other person to recognize it. It first will start off with, we have to say something. That's the first thing. If we just keep acting like we're okay and we know we're not, and but we just keep going, no one's gonna say, oh, okay, I'm gonna stop.
Syndrome. That was my second question. The superhero mm-hmm. syndrome. I can do it all.
Yeah. No, I can't. The first time I voiced that to my significant other and said, I can't do it all, and I don't want to die. I want to see my child grow up. We're going to have to divide this work. That's when I saw some things change. I had to give up whatever that hero syndrome was. And it's humbling. It's so humbling. Because, people do things a little bit differently than you do, so you want to be like, oh, that's not how I would do it. But at the same time, it's like, but do you want to be here? So just let it get done the way they do it. It's going to get done, and that's what matters. So it definitely starts with the woman saying, I can't do it all. Let's come back and re-talk this part out as far as what we're going to do, re-delegate. And then it's up to the other person to also recognize, okay, I'm going to do my part so that you don't have to do it all because you shouldn't. This was your partnership.
Go ahead, Ms. Sean.
Okay. Myself personally, I'm not trying to be Superwoman,
mm-hmm.
but I have to do what I have to do.
You think you are.
And I have mm-hmm. and I have responsibilities. Everybody's not responsible even though they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, me being a responsible adult, I have to do what I have to do regardless. I have priorities. And those priorities come first, no matter what. So if I need to make something happen, I have to make something happen. And far as depending on someone else, I can bet, truthfully, I have to depend on me. Because there's a lot of times when you might get, oh, I got your back or whatever, and they don't have your back. So I can't take someone's word for it that hasn't shown me that they have my back. And even if they did, I'm going to do what I have to do. I have to be independent and count on me. So that's what I do. So for me, it's never been about Superwoman or whatever. It's basically Black survival. That's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Black people are thrown so many things. They have so many things coming their way, thrown at them.
Yeah.
And it just depends on how you respond to it.
All right, press one if you have a comment or a question. Okay, question. If both of y'all can answer it. Black men always facing violence. I mean, they are the prey. Do you think this is the same for black women?
Yes, in some aspects, not on the same plight as black men. As of recently, though, we've seen it throughout the years. Of course, when you compare the numbers, unfortunately, our black men have just both disenfranchisement and definitely are not privileged at all. Dr. Tia Fon talks a lot about it when it deals with both black men and their gender and just what the society has done. As far as women, too, because no one in our society respects black life, we're not seen as human. It's a cognitive difference thing.
Do we? Hold up, you brought up something. Let me stop you right there. Do we respect black life? Let's forget about the other cultures. We already know what their perception is. Do black folks respect black life?
We don't value ourselves the way we should. We love ourselves in the sense of, you know, like, oh, yeah, I like myself. I love myself. But when it comes to the value side, it goes back to we don't protect our life the way we should because we're kind of always in that fight or flight mode. That's what oppression does to us. It puts us in fight or flight. So we're looking at, did I overcome this today? Did I overcome that? Instead of taking those necessary moments of value and what we do when we value something. If it's a diamond in our hand, how do we act if we have a diamond in our hand? We're going to make sure we keep it in a nice little box and make sure it's polished right, not put it around certain environments. It goes back to how we value ourselves. So, no, I don't think we do. And I think once we start doing that, that will be the first step of our change and overcoming our oppression. It starts with how we see ourselves first.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead, Sean. Try to tackle that question. I already know what her response is going to be. Go ahead. Go ahead, Sean.
I might switch it up. Just be
I
think a lot of black people, I believe it starts with how you were raised, your environment, you know, where you came from. And because, you know, there's a lot of people, I see a lot of people that value themselves in my area. I see a few that don't, but I would say the majority of them do. But I think that when black people get so much negativity and stereotypes from like the media, which you mentioned earlier, and a lot of them feel that they are lacking. Like, for example, I have a friend, and we've been friends since we were little kids, and she's real light, almost white looking. Now, her daughter is brown. And her daughter hates her complexion and wishes she looked white-looking like her mother. She has three kids. The father is white. She wears weave in her hair. She has beautiful hair, though. This, like, past her waist, she wants nothing to do with being black at all. And told her mother recently that, why did you have to go find the blackest man in the neighborhood to get with when you had me?
Wow. Now that's deep.
That is deep.
I mean, it got a little worse. The mother also, okay, was married to the girl's father, and they got a divorce. And now she's like, she has this thing against black men, so she's like, nope, white men for me only, because black men are no good.
Mm-hmm.
And told her kids, she has two boys too, get with white women, and that's what they did. And her daughter, she wants her kids with white people.
That's really something else. Mm-hmm. Look, got a couple minutes left. Miss Wilson, where do we go from here? Where do the black woman go from here?
Continue to pursue a journey of healing. Once, I do believe this, once you see the black woman heal, you're going to see a lot more healing.
Like that family. That family and, needs a lot of healing about self-perception.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and it's funny that you bring up healing. I think our whole race, from billionaires down to the hustlers, you know, we all need healing when it comes to us respecting each other and respecting black life. That's and that's what it's all about. The self-perception, the self-thought. Women take it. And please, by all, black women, continue to be. I don't mind a black woman superhero. I love them. I love them. And especially when they're young, they're aggressive, they get goers, and they got their family. They do. I mean, hey. You know, whatever works for you. But we as the people need to heal. So I keep on saying this.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned this a couple, 2-3 weeks ago. We have multi-generational drama that we have to address.
Yeah.
Ms. Wilson, I'd like to thank you for coming on. And this has been a very, very stimulating conversation. And please keep me abreast of what's going on. Okay?
I will. Yes.
All right.
Thank you for
having me. Be sure what's going on tomorrow. More hot topics?
Yes.
No.
You know, I'm going to have to tackle one of them about that R. Kelly thing.
God.
That's going to be one of them.
Oh, God.
Probably the first.
He's going to spend the rest of his life in prison, which is deserved.
Mm-hmm.
He's a career pedophile. All right, that's it, folks. I'd like to thank you for tuning in. And again, be safe, heal, do the self-care, you know. And I know, sisters, I got to tackle a lot of responsibilities. But again, like Ms. Wilson said, that's life. Okay, as always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.
Good night.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Wood.